It's a special edition of the Doug Wright Show, the Jeb Bush Interview. More of Doug's exclusive discussion right now on KSL News Radio.
10:22 here at KSL News Radio, and let's get right back to the interview that I actually conducted yesterday with Jeb Bush right after his fundraiser, right after the luncheon. He was, and boy, prompt. You know, he said, I'll call at 2 o'clock. He called at exactly 2 o'clock, and we had a great conversation. And let's share the rest of it. We talked about, of course, there's an elephant in the room, and that's Donald Trump. We talked about that, but we also talked about Iran.
We've taken the wrong path. We've had a, I would not have started negotiations with the largest sponsor of, state sponsor of terrorism in the world, that has an organizing principle of its foreign policy to destabilize the Persian Gulf countries and all of the Middle East. I wouldn't have negotiated to begin with. And had we negotiated, it would have been on the broader context of their efforts to destabilize the region, their efforts to build ballistic missile capabilities, the fact that they repress their own people, and that they have three Americans held hostage, in effect. They're detained without cause. Not just focused on the capability to have a breakout and have be able to have a nuclear bomb, but to these broader issues need to be on the table. I would reject this deal out of hand, maintain the sanctions, strengthen them, and get a better deal. That would be the best of a bad situation that we've allowed to exist. The president has pulled back on almost every one of his prerogative or of his statements about what the objective for this deal was. And I think we're far worse off having the deal be approved and moving forward with the lifting of sanctions and $100 billion of fresh money that the Iranians will have. We're far better off to have no deal at all.
I pretend no expertise at all in diplomacy, but I am still flabbergasted we didn't get our hostages back. It just seems to me a deal breaker from square one.
No, I sadly conclude the same, and it, you know, who knows, maybe there's some agreement that privately has been made, but there's no evidence of it.
I have a dear friend whom you may have met at the luncheon. And he is of Iranian descent and is a very active member of our society and philanthropy and everything else, business here in the state of Utah. And he obviously is so concerned about what is happening in Iran. Is there a path? Is there a way to deal with the fundamentalism and the extremism and some of the really outrageous things that we see while still reaching out to the Iranian people?
Absolutely, we need to reach out to the Iranian people. But we shouldn't base our negotiations from a position of weakness with a naive belief that mullahs and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard will go quietly into the night. They just will change their behavior because we've given them everything they wanted. I can't think of a time in history where that's actually ever happened. And it's just, I think it's a naivete that is quite dangerous, to be honest with you. But we should be on the side of the Iranian people that want to be free. You know, the first year the president was elected, he had an opportunity to do that with the Green Revolution. As you recall, they stole the election from more moderate elements of Iranian society, more modern elements of Iranian society. They are under house arrest still, the two presidential candidates that did better than the candidate that ended up being elected by stealing the election. And the people are still repressed. There's no dissent allowed. We should be using the tools of communication directly with the Iranian people to make sure that they know that we're on their side. I'd say the same thing, by the way, with Russia as well. Mm-hmm. When we talk about Russia as a challenge for us as a country, they certainly are. But frankly, we need to be respectful of the Russian people and their aspirations. People in countries want to be free. And we should always be on the side of freedom in every one of the repressive countries of the world.
Governor, I want to be respectful of your time, but if I could ask one more question, it's kind of a two-prong, and there's kind of an elephant in the room. When we look at the rather robust array of people who would like to be the next president of the United States on the Republican side, we have 17 at this count, and many people are stumped by Trump, honestly, and are really asking the question, how in the world does a solid Republican message get out, especially with the fastest growing segment of the population, a segment of the population that your brother resonated with? And we've gone from a 42% Hispanic vote in the presidential elections for Republicans down to 27% when Mitt Romney ran. How in the world can the Republicans get a handle on immigration issues, appealing to Hispanic and minority voters, especially with the Trump factor?
Well, first of all, with Mr. Trump, I think there has to be respect for the fact that people are supporting him because they're angry about what's going on in Washington. They've landed on his candidacy, not necessarily for the specifics of his ideas, because there are none, but they're frustrated. They're angry with the dysfunction, and I respect that and understand it. But there needs to be – Donald Trump is the frontrunner right now, and so he needs to be held to the same standard as other candidates. And when he says things, he needs to be – he needs to explain what how he'll pay for it. For example, it will cost hundreds of billions of dollars to deport 11 million people. It will violate civil liberties in this country for innocent American citizens. It is building a wall and making another country pay for it is not a plan. He can't come up with the kind of money that it would take to do this. He's in the past, in the recent past, has been for higher taxation, taxing on assets, by the way, for a single payer system for our health care. He's not an advocate for conservative policies or conservative principles. And that's where I think his vulnerability is. And the broader point of how we win when our message is hopeful and optimistic, when we apply conservative principles to help everybody rise up, not just those that have already made it. We win when we campaign in the Latino communities, as I did yesterday in McAllen, Texas, or on college campuses or in the black churches. We win by being different than we've been in the past. Not changing our views, but campaigning in places where people begin to nod their heads and say, hey, maybe I am a conservative too. Mm-hmm. You win to get to 50. You don't win by dividing. And right now, Mr. Trump is really good at dividing us up in our disparate parts. But we need a broader, more hopeful, optimistic message with a leader that has actually done it to be able to take this message to the general election. And I intend to be that candidate. I'm working hard. With a lot of support, I'm excited about the prospects of this. I know it's an arduous, long journey, but I believe we're on the right path to win.
Former Governor Gary Johnson was in my studio the other day, and he told me, and I haven't checked his math, but he said if 11 million people were given any kind of due process at all, it would take 40 years to go through that log of, again, just giving them fundamental decency in the courts. That is substantial.
Which they will have by our Constitution.
Exactly.
And it's something that we've had a president who has trampled the Constitution, acting, using authority he doesn't have. We don't need a Republican to be advocating that kind of view now.
Many of us have wondered if it's the misogynistic statements that will take him down first or alienating the fastest growing segment of the population first.
Well, again, I just think it's important to provide an alternative. First of all, inform people of what his views are. Secondly, to provide an alternative that gives people a sense of what conservatism, Reagan conservatism means, which is an uplifting message, not one that's focused on grievance. And then respect the people that are supporting him today because of their legitimate anger about the dysfunction in Washington.
It was an interesting conversation yesterday, and I appreciated Governor Bush making that time available for us. We conducted the interview yesterday at 2 o'clock right after the luncheon, and he couldn't have been more accommodating. Bye.